Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cyber Wargaming, Research and Education for Security in a Dangerous Digital World. Edited by Frank L. Smith III, Nina A. Collars, and Benjamin H. Schechter. Narrated by Kyle Tate. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. 1. Shall we play a game? Fundamentals of Cyber Wargaming. Frank L. Smith III, Nina A. Collars, and Benjamin H. Schechter. Yes, cyberspace is critical for security. Why, when, and how are not always clear, however. Because of this unsettling combination of significance and mystery, the need for good decision-making about cyber, political, strategy, operations, has never been more acute. This is true for government, industry, academia, and society at large. As cyberspace has become central to our social, political, and economic lives, it has become rife with costly and dangerous conflict. For example, Russia interfered in the U.S. presidential election in 2016. Combining computer hacking with influence operations to destabilize American democracy. Russian malware named NotPetya also spread from Ukraine around the world in 2017. This attack caused $10 billion in damage to companies such as Maersk, Merck, and FedEx, using an exploit that had leaked, ironically, from the U.S. National Security Agency. The list of major cyber incidents goes on and on. From the SolarWinds breach by Russian intelligence in 2020, to the hack of Microsoft Exchange by China in 2021, to the ransomware attack on Colonial Pipeline by Russian cybercriminals a few months later. No doubt other incidents will have occurred by the time you listen to this book. Cyber threats are not new, nor is conflict in cyberspace. But practical knowledge about them is lagging. Unlike land, sea, air, or outer space, cyberspace is a human creation. People built it, and yet the complexity of our creation seemingly defies comprehension. The scale, scope, and speed of networked information technologies provide fertile ground for unexpected vulnerabilities, interdependencies, and knock-on effects. Surprises lurk online and off, ranging from shocks to global supply chains for hardware and software, to the myriad helpful and harmful ways that people use cyberspace. Information technologies make it possible to share information about threats, but that does not mean information sharing actually happens. Authoritative data about cybersecurity are often fragmented and inaccessible, for example, as private, protected, or secret information. The net result is that decision makers in government, industry, and civil society struggle to understand cyberspace in a comprehensive fashion. Researchers, educators, and students in academia are no different. Fundamental questions remain unanswered. How should we conceive of cyberspace? What are viable offensive and defensive actions in this domain? What effects, or returns on investment, do these actions have? And how do cyber effects influence other aspects of business or war? Carl von Clausewitz famously described war as being so interactive, so complex, and so confusing that it inevitably creates friction between the best-laid plans and actual practice. Much the same can be said about cyberspace. Cyber friction and fog make it difficult for policymakers, practitioners, and scholars to answer important questions about what to do. Cyber war games can help. Wargaming is a powerful approach to solving interactive, complex, and confusing problems. War games can save lives, according to Matthew Caffrey, and make the difference between victory and defeat. For example, war games were the centerpiece of innovative thinking at the U.S. Naval War College during the 1920s and 1930s. These war games helped American military planners successfully prepare for key battles against Imperial Japan during World War II. Even references to war games in popular culture have had serious consequences. In the 1983 movie War Games, a tech whiz teenager hacks a military computer linked to nuclear command and control. The artificial intelligence, AI, on this computer asks the hacker, "Shall we play a game?" And their game nearly triggers World War III. Far-fetched as this plot may sound, the movie shaped policy in the real world. Watching it inspired President Ronald Reagan, a former movie star, to ask his military advisors if such a nightmare scenario could happen. Finding that it could, Reagan signed a new National Security Decision Directive on Telecommunications and Automated Information System Security in 1984, NSDD 145. The U.S. Congress also started creating new laws on cybersecurity, including what became the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act of 1986. Cyber war games are not only a plotline for techno thrillers, and wargaming is not only about war, despite its name. War games are about human decision-making and the consequences of those decisions, particularly in the face of conflict and uncertainty. This means that war games are a general-purpose tool. They can be used for both research and education on a wide range of topics, from nuclear deterrence and future war fighting to crisis management and pandemic response. Contrary to popular belief, cybersecurity is also about human decision-making, not just hardware, software, networks, and data. The combinations of social and technical knowledge required to understand cyberspace, and the countless ways in which it relates to security, do not fit well within traditional academic disciplines, such as political science and computer science. Nor do best practices for cybersecurity fit neatly within professional distinctions, say between the C-suite and IT department. Fortunately, as a general-purpose tool, wargaming is interdisciplinary. When used correctly, cyber wargaming can bridge the gaps between social and technical knowledge in university classrooms, corporate boardrooms, and military headquarters. Cyber wargames can be played in any of these different settings. You do not need a high-tech venue to play out decision-making about advanced technology. While some cyber war games are played on computers, others resemble classic board games, with dice, cards, and tokens for the players. The number of players can range from 2 people to dozens or even hundreds of participants. Small games can be played in a single room. Larger games require more space, or they can be played remotely as a video conference. They can be played over the course of a few hours, as typically is the case in academia and industry, or for several days, as with some cyber war games in the government and military. As a tool, they are useful in part because they are flexible. Alas, despite their utility and flexibility, cyber war games are often shrouded in mystery. This book is among the first to explain how war games can advance research and education on cyber policy, strategy, and operations. Whereas many cyber war games are secret or cloistered away inside government and industry, this book openly describes important examples in plain English. Whereas many cyber experts do not interact with war gamers, this book brings together innovative voices from across professional military education, civilian agencies, private industry, think tanks, and academia. Whereas many conventional war games eschew or ignore cyberspace, this book explains different ways to think about this domain, actions in it, their effects, and how these effects cross digital and physical worlds. The lessons learned through cyber wargaming are applicable beyond these games. They shed light on how people interpret, act upon, and experience cyberspace and other emerging technologies in real life. Cyber wargaming, therefore, provides valuable insight into how individuals and groups really think and act. This book likewise provides valuable insights for policymakers, practitioners, analysts, teachers, and students who are looking for effective ways to answer hard problems about business and war in cyberspace. Why wargame cyber? War games are useful for research, education, and entertainment. Admittedly, entertainment is important, but we focus on serious or professional war games that do work. While they may be entertaining as well, the primary purpose of these games is to create and disseminate knowledge. Be they analytical or educational, war games do work by addressing human decision-making, uncertainty, and competition or conflict. Cyber war games are a special kind of war game. They address human decisions about cyberspace. We use the term cyber broadly to refer to networked digital information technologies. Despite their technical content, cyber war games are about people rather than technology assessment. The players are human. They have human agency. They also have complex emotions, identities, and interpersonal relationships to boot. All these human factors relate to the complex and uncertain problems that war games aim to address. People are not omniscient. We grapple with risk, uncertainty, and indeterminacy, especially when we are trying to make decisions about complex and dynamic environments such as cyberspace. Here, multifaceted and shifting stacks and layers of technology blend with the behaviors and beliefs of billions of users and organizations. Cyber war games explicitly grapple with social and technical features of this domain. Unlike narrow technical challenges such as capture the flag competitions, which typically ignore social context. By addressing human factors, including group dynamics, war games can provide traction on ill-defined problems and the possibility of surprise. As Thomas Schelling once observed, one thing a person cannot do, no matter how rigorous his analysis or heroic his imagination, is to draw up a list of things that would never occur to him. Cyber war games can help reveal gaps and errors in how we think. Just as war games are not only about war, cyber war games are not only about cyber war. They are about competition and conflict, however. All cyber war games address some sort of struggle, even when they also include cooperation. In some war games, players struggle against intentional, perhaps malicious actions by other people, organizations, or governments. In other games, players struggle against competing demands on limited resources as they respond to accidents, errors, and natural disasters. These struggles play out in the abstract. War games are not field exercises with real weapons or military forces, nor are they a cyber range for penetration testing or technical training with real equipment and code. Instead, war games focus on what people might decide to do when faced with adversity and the consequences of their prior decisions. How might decision makers react when their organization is hacked, for example, or when their government hacks another country that then hacks them back? Cyber war games are useful tools for examining these vexing questions. How to wargame cyber? There is no single way to wargame. This book answers the question of how to wargame cyber by providing a broad array of instructive examples, coupled with candid reflections on these games from the researchers and educators who created them. Listening to this book does not require deep expertise in cybersecurity or wargaming. Instead, we seek to showcase this hybrid field in a way that is accessible to everyone, regardless of whether you are a seasoned expert or someone who is simply curious. The chapters in this book have been organized to clarify the murky and troublesome aspects of cyber wargaming. With this introduction in hand, you are welcome to listen to this book from start to finish, or jump to the chapters that you find most interesting. Newcomers to cybersecurity or wargaming should note that this volume builds upon, rather than summarizes, large bodies of literature in each of these fields. We focus on their intersection. As we see it, cyber war games vary widely, and yet some of the basic issues are universal. These include game objectives, human players, cyber scenarios, actions, and adjudication. Game objectives. Play with purpose. Cyber war games, like all war games, are tools. Whether these tools are useful depends on the task at hand. Everything else about a war game, its players, scenario, actions, adjudication, depends on the objective or purpose. Form should follow function. If it does not, then the war game stands to fail. Sadly, many do. In the Department of Defense, for instance, the notion of a bunch of guys sitting around a table has earned the acronym BOGSAT, which is one way that war games fail when they lack clear objectives. The most important question to ask about cyber wargaming is why wargame? Or, said another way, what's the point? This book focuses on two basic objectives, specifically cyber research and education. Granted, players can learn in research games, and educational games can inspire new research. Nevertheless, it is useful to define the purpose of any wargaming in terms of these related but distinct objectives. Is the main point to help educate the players, or is it to help researchers study decision-making? Here, the objectives of research are to create new knowledge by discovering, exploring, or analyzing solutions to problems with cyber. For some problems, research objectives can be accomplished through experimental or analytical war games. Useful examples include iterated wargaming research with the International Crisis War Game, discussed in Chapter 3, David Banks and Benjamin Jensen's Island Intercept and Net War Games, discussed in Chapter 4, Chris Doherty and Ed McGrady's Remote Wargaming, discussed in Chapter 5, and the other analytical games discussed in the first half of this book. Another objective is education, namely to impart knowledge about cyberspace and security therein. For some lessons, learning objectives can be achieved through educational or experiential war games. Game-based learning can be engaging. Educational games are widely recognized in studies on pedagogy, not only for being more effective than standalone lectures and rote memorization, but also for providing a stronger understanding of context in complex environments. War games are frequently used as capstone events in professional military education, as described by Benjamin Leitzel in Chapter 13, as well as by Hyung Lee and James DeMuth in Chapter 14. Cyber war games are also popular among students at civilian universities, as described by Safa Shahwan and Frank Smith in Chapter 9. Educational war games can teach players about conflict that they can fight and learn from, without the loss of real blood and treasure. More specific objectives fall under the general headings of research and education. Good war games are designed accordingly. More often than not, the more precise the objectives are for a game, the better the outcomes. Research games hinge on clearly defined analytical logics that resemble the scientific method. When well designed, the learning objectives for educational war games are clear as well. These objectives may range from creative thinking and problem solving, as several chapters suggest, to cyber defense and emergency response training, as in Matt Duncan's account of GridX in Chapter 10. War games are a general purpose tool, but they are not an all-purpose tool. A cyber war game does not test whether criminals can penetrate a law firm's firewall, for example, or whether spies can snoop on government data stored in the cloud. In Chapter 2, Andrew Reddy, Ruby Booth, Bethany Goldblum, Kiran Lakaraju, and Jason Reinhardt Explain the trade-offs that researchers must make when choosing between war games and alternative methods. Likewise, in Chapter 8, Andreas Hagman considers what playful learning about cybersecurity both can and cannot accomplish for education. Given the capabilities and limitations of this tool, the most important step in successful cyber wargaming is to specify your objectives and determine whether a war game is well suited to addressing them in the first place. Players, human factors. Because cyber war games address human decision making, the human players are paramount. Questions about who plays should be answered based on the game's objective. For example, if the objective is to improve incident response and resilience in the private sector, then executives from the C-suite are probably the best players, as Maxim Kowalski, Benjamin Schechter, and Luis Carajal Kim describe in Chapter 11. If the objective is to teach military officers about cyber operations and doctrine, then the most relevant players are probably students at schools such as the Army, Navy, and Air War Colleges. Either way, the stated objective for a game may differ from the objectives of individual players, who may have other motives, as well as very human biases and social relationships, as Rachel Schaefer describes in Chapter 7. The relationship between players and cyber war games may differ from war games that do not address cyberspace in at least two respects. First, the roles that individuals or teams play in cyber war games may differ, namely, who plays what. Like the players themselves, the relevant roles, positions, or characters depend on the objective or purpose of the game. Potential roles range from chief executive officer and chief technology officer in cyber war games about private industry to national security advisor and combatant commander in games about military operations. Decision-making about cyberspace often involves different people and organizations, and thus different roles or positions, from decisions made about other aspects of government or business. Cyberspace also extends across legal, organizational, and geographic borders, among others. Consequently, the range of players and roles that are relevant to cyber war games may be more diverse than conventional war games, focused on, say, sea control. Rather than just blue and red teams facing off against each other, cyber war games may also warrant green and gray teams that represent allied or unaligned but nevertheless influential actors in cyberspace. Similarly, cyber war games for the military may need to include civilian players or roles for private industry and civil society, just as cyber war games for industry and civilian agencies may need to include military players or roles. Second, the expertise that players bring to cyber war games may differ from other games, that is, what each player already knows. Despite the ubiquitous cyber awareness training that pervades the modern workplace, most people are not cyber experts, nor are most leaders or policymakers. Some are, however. The wide variation in background knowledge that players bring to cyber war games can have a significant impact. Are the players in your game undergraduate students, network administrators, corporate lawyers, senior officers, or a mix? Some players' naivete about the cyber domain is qualitatively different from their potential ignorance about the physical domains of land, sea, and air. Even if you are unfamiliar with infantry maneuvers, naval engagements, or aerial campaigns, you still enjoy some applicable knowledge, tacit and explicit, by virtue of having lived experience with earth, water, and air since you were born. Yet the physics and structure of cyber terrain can seem alien, even for people who use the internet every day. Neither ignorance nor expertise prevents successful cyber wargaming. In fact, these games provide a unique vehicle through which experts and non-experts can meaningfully work together. But preparing for what players do and do not know is critical for achieving the research or educational objectives of the game. Cyber Scenarios. It was a dark and stormy night. Much of what makes a war game a game, rather than real life, is the fictional scenario or story about the world that it depicts. Ed McGrady describes wargaming as a kind of collective storytelling. Telling stories helps us make sense of our world, and stories about cyberspace are no exception. Said another way, cyber war games are dramas. Dramatic elements such as the setting and plot provide context. Context is critical for research and education, because human decision-making depends on the context. It is also important for player engagement. Without proper context, players may fight the scenario, namely protest the game's premise and plot, rather than willfully suspend their disbelief enough to play as intended. Because some aspects of cyberspace are unfamiliar to some players, scenarios that effectively set the stage for cyber war games are particularly important. On the one hand, all war games simplify how they represent the real world. No game captures all the minutiae of sea, land, air, space, or for that matter, cyberspace. What you include and exclude is a critical design decision. Philip Sabin describes this decision as a choice between accurately capturing the complex details of a real conflict and keeping the simulation simple enough to be understood and played in a reasonable time. However you choose, your representation will always be an abstraction. Ideally, this representation will provide a shared point of reference for the players. But much of the labor of filling in the blanks of the scene is left up to the player's knowledge, experience, and imagination. On the other hand, representing cyberspace presents special challenges. Experts still debate the nature of this domain, including its size, scope, technologies, and users. Representing it in ways that provide common points of reference and comprehensive visuals is not easy. The dynamics of cyberspace do not help. Not only do the hardware, software, networks, and data change over time, sometimes rapidly, but the users also change, as does their behavior. In contrast, there is little need for a naval war game to specify that the Pacific Ocean will behave the same way throughout the game. In a cyber war game, the analogous terrain could radically change. It could even disappear. This is roughly akin to declaring that the entire ocean could freeze, or that ships at sea might suddenly teleport to the other side of the Earth. There is a logic to cyberspace. It is not magic or random, but it is complicated. Thus, setting the stage for a cyber war game warrants careful attention. Different war games address these challenges by providing players with different kinds of background information. For example, the Cyber 912 Strategy Challenge described in Chapter 9 provides a rich description of the scenario, which players receive weeks in advance of the war game. In contrast, the virtual cyber war game described by Chris Demchak and David Johnson in Chapter 12 is intended to be playable with limited preparation, so it only provides a brief description of the conflict scenario immediately before the game begins. The kind of information provided also depends on the level of decision-making that the game aims to address. Strategic war games address national interests, as illustrated by the Matrix game discussed in Chapter 14. These games typically abstract away a lot of technical detail and treat large swaths of cyberspace as a black box. They focus instead on high-level inputs and outputs to decision-making by government officials who wield diplomatic, informational, military, and economic instruments of national power. Operational war games focus on decision-making inside a particular theater, campaign, or area of operation, such as the conflict with China over Taiwan, described in Chapter 5. More granular information is warranted at the operational level. For example, the status of warfighting functions, such as command, control, and logistics, or business functions, such as industrial processes, human resources, and
sample complete. Ready to continue?